Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ravens and Crows on LiveParanormal.com. This is Alex, your host, and welcome to another thrilling episode of the show. If this is your first time tuning in, I want to say welcome, and we are so glad that you're here. If this also is your first time tuning in, then you are in for quite a treat. You can join us in the Live Paranormal chat room at liveparanormal.com. You can click on Live Radio Player, and that will take you to an interactive chat. You can also get in touch with us on Facebook at liveparanormal.com. You can also get in touch with me personally, Alex Matsulo, on Facebook as well, and you can message me any questions you might have for tonight. We are a radio show that covers all aspects of the paranormal. Why the name Ravens and Crows? Well, you could say that, you know, paranormal investigators and researchers, initially we might all look the same, but that's actually not the case. Just like how ravens and crows can be misinterpreted and mistaken as the same bird, they're actually quite different. So, which is why I selected the name. So, anyway, my friends, we have quite a show for you tonight. I am so excited to have Sam Baltrusis on the show. I interviewed him a long, long time ago, I think maybe 5 years ago, and I was really impressed with him. I had talked to him, about, you know, haunts in Boston, Massachusetts, and it was actually really, it was quite interesting. He had a lot of information. He had a lot of knowledge in the field, and I was quite impressed with that. And he has been busy ever since. So it's been quite an adventure watching him on social media. And one of his latest projects I am actually really excited about because it covers a topic that I am so fascinated with. And for those of you who don't know what I am truly fascinated with, it is the Salem Witch Trials. So, and that can be a bit of a sensitive subject for some people because, you know, witchcraft and whatnot is quite, you know, it can be a little unsettling, you know. It's definitely something that people are not used to talking about or have comfort talking about. So that's why I'm really excited for this show. So we're going to cover some paranormal news real quick. So big stuff happening. Travel Channel's Most Terrifying Places in America premiered last Sunday. And I'm really excited to announce that yours truly, your host speaking right now, is going to be featured on the episode that is airing this coming Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the episode called Cursed Towns. So, well, hopefully I make it into the episode. You never know. There's always that. there's always that possibility that something might happen, and you know, I'll end up on the cutting room floor, or they'll take everything that I said and then decide to have someone thinner and prettier than me say the exact same words. You never know. Maybe they don't have the budget for that. We'll see. We'll find out on Sunday. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started with tonight's show. I am so thrilled to have Sam Beltrusis here. He is the author of Ghosts of Boston, Ghosts of Salem, and he has penned 9 historical-based ghost books. He's also been featured on several national TV shows, including Destination America's Haunted Towns and the Travel Channel episode on Salem, and he has served as Boston's paranormal expert on Biography Channel's Haunted Encounters. So he knows what he's talking about. He moonlights as a tour guide and launched the successful ghost tours Boston Haunts and the Wicked Salem Tour. He's very sought after in doing lectures and speaks about paranormal-related events all over New England. And he's got quite a few books coming out. One of them I'm really excited about is Wicked Salem, Exploring Lingering Lore and Legends. And that is set to release in April 2019. So I'm excited. You should be excited, too. And I'm so thrilled to see that he is in the wings getting ready to come on. So without further ado, I'm excited to welcome Sam to the show. Sam, welcome to Ravens and Crows.
Hey, Alex. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So, yeah, when you were talking about being replaced on TV with the thinner model, that actually happened to me the first show that I did.
It was funny. Oh, gosh, don't tell me that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I did. I was on for a little bit, but then I talked for about an hour on camera, and then they got someone to come in with they actually wanted someone with a Boston accent. So they got this guy with this really thick Boston accent basically to say what I said after. So I don't know if it was like the younger, prettier model, but it was someone with a different, you know, like a Boston approach to the paranormal.
Oh my gosh. That's like hilarious, but also really troubling at the same time.
I know. Well, that's television for you.
They had the most unfavorable camera angles on us too when we were doing our filming. So I'm making a joke to everyone. If I make it into the show, it's going to be starring me and my double chin, because the camera was like 6 inches maybe above the ground because they wanted a shot of the building we investigated behind us.
Yeah, so, I did some filming today as well, and it's always like you know what you're talking about, but then when you get on camera, it's a whole different thing. You have to worry about what you look like, you have to worry about what you say, and there's all these things you bet. People that haven't done TV, it's such a foreign concept. Like, what do I do? And you know, it's one of those things that I personally don't like doing TV. The only reason I like doing it is because it gets more people to pick up my books. So mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that you kind of have to do to promote your books, but it's not something I particularly love to do.
I totally hear you. yeah, that's definitely, it's a great promotional method. And for me, like, we are an all-female team, and that's really the only reason why we agreed to do the show, is because there's not really a big presence for all-female paranormal teams out there. And we're like, well, maybe this will be a good thing for, you know, just to let people know, like, we're out there. And we also do residential cases, so just to get our name out there and let people know, hey, we're here if you need help. So, and I also write books, so to get my books out there is always a great thing. So
absolutely.
Nice. So, Sam, you've been quite busy lately. What have you been working on?
Well, I have. So, the book 13 Most Haunted Cemeteries in Massachusetts just came out. And then my big project that you mentioned at the very beginning of the show is Wicked Salem. And that's been kind of like my passion project for the past like 3 to 4 years. And I wrote that for Globe Pequot. And it's just, I'm so proud of how it's turning out. It's just such a magical experience to write that book. And it's, you know, like the books that I write are generally, you know, like 120 pages. So this one's like 300 pages, and just a lot of giving a voice to the victims from the witch trials from 1692, coupled with talking to a lot of the modern people, whether they're historians or local witches or just people of interest related to the witch trial. So there's this nice juxtaposition between Salem of 1692 versus Salem of present day.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and we seem to have, well, especially right now in our society, I mean, we kind of glaze over the Salem witch trials when it comes to American history. I think I remember it being covered maybe two or three times in my 12 years of being in, you know, general education, kindergarten to 12th grade, and maybe my eighth grade trip, we spent a day in Salem and we went to the Salem Witch Museum. But we didn't explore anything else, and that's pretty much all I remember from it. So unless that topic interests you, it seems today a lot of people they know the basic story, but they don't know, like, some people don't even know, like, different aspects of the witch trials, timelines, or even some of the victims' names, which is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, the witch trials are definitely, they play over and over again, and so that's why it's such an applicable topic. And, you know, my first exposure to the Salem witch trials was watching, the play The Crucible. I think I read that in either middle school or high school.
I love The Crucible. I love The Crucible. That's one of my favorite plays.
Me too, but the only issue with The Crucible is that it's a great work of fiction. So it's actually based on the witch trials. When they come to Salem for their history, they think that, you know, oh, well, John Proctor and Abigail Williams had an affair. I'm like, absolutely not. John Proctor was 60 years old. Abigail Williams was 11 or 12 years old. What Arthur Miller has done is done a great work of historical fiction, but yet people think that what's in The Crucible is what really happened, which is not the case. And a lot of what I do in Wicked Salem is kind of untangle a lot of those misconceptions that are perpetuated by not only by The Crucible, but by pop culture. Because we do get a lot of Salem witch trials, not necessarily in school, but we get it in pop culture and kind of untangling those myths that we think, about the witch trials, but also just about witches in general.
Yep. No, I completely agree. And you're probably familiar with the TV show. I forgot what channel it's on, but Salem, pretty much it's the witch trials, but the witches are real. And oh my gosh, for fiction wise and entertainment, I enjoy it, but I just think, oh, there's some people out there who are going to think that this was what really happened, or they think that this is real.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Like the Crucible, I feel like, it's such a great play and great play-turned-movie. Salem, I think people get it, and it's weird because I gave tours at the House of the Seven Gables last year, and apparently one of the characters, I think it's Mary Sibley. I'm not sure who portrayed the main protagonist, but she supposedly lived there. So, and I was talking to like these like diehard Salem fans, Salem fans is in the TV show, and I think people get that's not real. But what I don't like about it is, for example, like Tituba is often portrayed as like this African American voodoo priestess, and she has been for about 100 years or so. And truthfully, she was from Barbados. She was lighter skinned. She didn't practice voodoo. And there's like all these things that we get, and you know, that's kind of what the gist of the Salem show was like that Tituba was the voodoo priestess that she's often portrayed. So I think what's kind of fun about it is untangling it, but then you get things like, well, were the witches burned at the stake? And I'm like, first of all, they weren't witches. They were innocent men and women. And also they were hanged. Well, 19 were hanged. And one guy, Giles Corey, was pressed to death over a maybe three day period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh man. So it's really interesting too, when you look into, especially when it comes to, because you just said it yourself, these were innocent men and women who were, for the most, I mean, to put it bluntly, they were murdered. And it's interesting when you look at the politics that played behind the witch trials too, because it, I don't know how much of it would the witch trials were motivated by wanting to profit off of someone else's, you know, passing so they can get their land or property seizure and X, Y, and Z. What were some of the political reasons that you think that caused the witch trials to happen?
Well, I go a lot into that in my book, because that's another reason, like another question that's often asked is like, why did this happen? Truthfully, we don't really know. We can come up with sort of an educated response to that, and it's a lot of different factors that kind of tie in together that caused it. For me, people accused innocent people of witchcraft for their land is part of it. I do think that there was a lot of Salem and the witch trials. There were a lot of locations that we don't, when we think of modern day Salem, for example, like Danvers, which is where the actual witch hunt took place for about 50% of the victims. It was like wild. It was uncharted land. So there was a lot going on out there. There's also Topsfield. There's North Andover, which is what we know today as the location, but that was all considered parts of Salem. And where we, you know, when we think of Salem present day, that wasn't a Salem town. So Salem Village, which is modern day Danvers, is where a large portion of the actual witch hysteria took place. As far as like why it happened, you know, Ground Zero was with Betty Paris and the Reverend Samuel Paris household in modern day Danvers. And that's where it started, and it just kind of escalated from there. So I think what it was different situations for each particular person. I do think it was misogyny, and women were, if they were different or they had a voice in 1692, they were quickly put in their place. So if you look at the women, they were easy prey, like Bridget Bishop or Sarah Good, who was a town beggar woman, but she also was very vocal and outspoken, and they wanted to shut her up, basically. So there were many factors: misogyny, there was socioeconomics, there was prior history. If they had, for example, the Rebecca Nurse, who was this wonderful woman, like kind of like an elderly grandmother who was the sweetest pie, and you know, her sister Mary Eastie was also accused and executed, and their other sister, the third sister Sarah Coyce, was accused, but she wasn't executed, and their mother was accused of witchcraft about 10 to 11 years prior to the witch trials. So that kind of automatically marked them as potential witches because of that backstory. So it really depends. Every situation is different.
Wow. That's completely true too. And it's amazing how, I guess you could say, cause you had mentioned that, I wanted to ask you in a bit about Danvers, but it's interesting how, I don't know, in your opinion, do you think that maybe has our society changed at all between, Arthur Miller wrote The Crucible as a response to when literally everyone was getting accused of being a communist, and it seems like today we're almost like back into a witch trial mode. Granted, we're not hanging people or, you know, we're not committing murder or things like that, but it's almost like our witch hunts have evolved over time, and yet we kind of keep going back to step one.
Yeah, I mean, it's history repeats itself, and I say that on my tours all the time. And like, we look at modern day politics, and you know, not just, you know, certain people in power have used witch hunts sort of inappropriately. I feel like in some cases, you know, I mean, I don't want to go too political with modern day situations, but I definitely think that in certain situations that this is this has become a perfect storm for witch trials, hysteria like symptoms or behaviors. And so, yeah, it definitely plays over and over again. And we're kind of going through a period where people who are innocent are being accused of things that may or may not have happened. You're innocent until proven guilty, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I completely agree. And what's your opinion on the tourism that is happening in Salem? Because I know you play, you know, you work a lot in that area, and you mentioned that, you know, Salem Village is Danvers today. So what is your opinion on how the tourism in Salem has grown and evolved? And I don't know what a good word is for it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Or you could say devolve too, like depending, because I was in Salem today actually filming a TV show, a local TV show. And, you know, this is what I think. I think that in my new book, Wicked Salem, coming out in April, I interviewed Lori Cabot, who is one of the most well-known witches from Salem. She's the official witch of Salem. And we talk a lot about what, you know, like what Salem has become. And, you know, when she kind of rose to her fame in like the beginnings of like the 70s or mid 70s to the 80s to the 90s, you know, in many ways, people, when I interview people in Salem, like, look, why is Salem like it is today? And they all said Lori Cabot. She's sort of like the person that made witchcraft fashionable. It made Salem a point of interest, because it's so ironic to have modern day witches in the witch city, which was known for executing its 19 innocent people and then Giles. So I talk a lot about that. I think that what's going on now is a resurgence in getting the history correct, which was not the case 10 years ago. When I first started giving tours and writing about Salem, it was kind of trapped in the 80s, you know, like it was still very much a place you would go to get scared on Halloween and not necessarily a place you would go to learn about history. And in the new book, I really talked to a lot of local historians who are picking up the pieces from research from like the late, you know, like the late 19th century. There was also an interest in the 1970s when there was the whole ergot poisoning theory, where, you know, the girls, the afflicted girls somehow were dosed on ergot, which is like a fungus in the bread. So it was moldy bread that caused them to kind of go crazy. And I talk a lot about the ergot poisoning theory and how that, that did sort of perpetuate a whole different theory of what happened. So there was a resurgence in the 1970s. I think as far as history and getting it correct, it's definitely the case now in Salem. So I've noticed a shift from like kind of like the scary, spooky world type approach to Salem to a people who are genuinely passionate about learning the history and the correct history of Salem.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I have to say, the only thing I really remembered from my eighth grade trip there was the Salem Witch Museum and the
which is
I don't
really
I'll say
a
this
museum.
As to be offensive, but yeah, it's not really a museum. It reminded me of the Chuck E. Cheese Disneyland animatronics, and this was the year 2000, and so I haven't been there since then. I don't know if it's evolved or changed since then.
Well, I mean, I did some work, and I didn't last very long there. What I am impressed with the Salem Witch Trials, with the Salem Witch Museum, is that they are trying to undo some of the hokiness of what they were with real history. So they're working with a woman named Marilyn Roach, who's sort of like the premier person when it comes to Salem's history. And she wrote the book on Salem's history and really kind of like the leader in the resurgence and getting the history correct. So they are taking some major moves. However, you know, like those, they're not wax figures. They're actually, I think, resin figures. It's so hokey. And I lasted about 2 days, and I'm like, you know, I can't be surrounded by sort of like this Disney-fied version of the witch trials. It just made me feel kind of dirty, and I couldn't work there.
Yeah. I had similar thoughts as, you know, a 14-year-old, you know, from, you know, in there with her class trip. It's like, okay. But, I mean, it was, I had already read The Crucible too at the time, which, you know, that, and I was already hooked by then, but I remember that was probably my biggest memory there. And we didn't see anything else. I think we got back on the bus right afterwards, and we were heading towards New York. So, nice. Well, that's some interesting perspectives there. So you've been doing a lot of work investigation-wise, paranormal investigation-wise, and you've had some contact and you've had communication with some of the victims from the witch trials.
Yeah, you know, they're like my friends, which is because I spent so much time in Salem, not only in Salem, but like in Danvers and the different locations where these people lived more than 300 years ago. And as someone who started off kind of like a believer and like a sort of a sensitive to the paranormal, I have like it's a muscle that you work on. So by doing investigations and spirit communications, I'm to the point now where I'm actually the muscle of communication is definitely stronger than it's ever been. So I definitely connect with some spirits in Salem that are tied to the witch trials. You know, I'll be giving my tours and I have people who are on my tour who are either clairvoyant or psychic medium saying, well, Rebecca Nurse is standing right behind you and our Bridget Bishop's right with you. And specifically the women, I've really connected with their spirits over the years. When that first started happening, I was kind of terrified. But now I'm to the point where it's sort of like, oh, it's Bridget. Hey, Bridget. But one of my first tour experiences in Salem, I was giving a tour and, you know, when you're giving tours in Salem, like I didn't give my own tour. I gave a tour that was kind of done for 20 years and a lot of it was historically inaccurate. And so one portion, which is modern day Turner Seafood, but it was called the Lyceum back in the day, was where Bridget Bishop's supposed tavern was. They're like, oh, Bridget was like a loose woman who wore red clothing and, ran a tavern. And I said that in front of the group. And what's weird about it is when I was talking, this apple appeared out of nowhere. It kind of rolled up to me while I was talking. And the people in my group thought it was like a prop or part of the tour. And it absolutely was not. And it turns out that's Bridget Bishop's apple orchard. And it was her property too. But the area that I was standing in was where her apple orchard was. So I felt like Bridget was kind of like correcting the history. And she kind of a playful spirit. She definitely was, I would say it was more of like a outspoken woman for her time. And she did wear, you know, she kind of did, wore clothing that was kind of against the grain, but usually the clothing that she would wear was more of a sign of wealth. And I think the people of Salem and of Danvers, or modern day Danvers or Salem Village and Salem Town, didn't like the fact that she was trying to like appear rich, which she kind of married into it. And she wasn't really from money. And she was also known for being an extreme penny pincher. And, you know, part of the weirdness with Bridget, she kind of upset people in the neighborhood because she would climb over her fence to, if an apple fell into their yard or their property, she would get the apple back. So she was such an extreme penny pincher that it really upset a lot of the locals.
I can relate to that, but and it's amazing how, pretty much back then, if the town had a bias against you, you're kind of SOL there.
Yeah, I mean, a part of the initial backlash to her, I mean, it started before the witch trials hysteria, because someone actually accused her of being a witch before. But with her, it was very sexualized. So it was like, you know, well, Bridget was sitting on the corner of my bed while I was sleeping. And, you know, that was known as what spectral evidence. And spectral evidence is basically made up stuff. Like, I saw the ghost of Bridget Bishop sitting on the corner of my bed. And so I feel like that a lot of the anger toward Bridget was to do with money more than anything, or the lack of money. The fact that she was trying to live beyond her means. She was outspoken. Oh, she also, she was known for publicly fighting with her husband. She had multiple husbands, and her husband who died, she was right before she was executed, her husband died kind of mysteriously. And people kind of whispered that maybe she was a witch and she killed him for his money. And that was one of the local things that people were talking about. So she was kind of a, easy prey at the time to be accused. And when she would fight with her husband, she actually would be brought into this area, which I call torture central, and put into like a crude contraption designed by the Puritans that, you know, like they, to shame women. They would put like a muzzle around women's mouths if they were known to gossip. They were put into kind of what's the crude contraption where your hands are like your heads in this kind of held up and your hands are held up. It's kind of
like a stockade.
Yeah, exactly. Like they would put you into that if you fought with your husband or if you were drinking publicly. It was about public shaming, and they really think about shaming Bridget Bishop specifically.
Goodness. Wow. So from your experience and interactions with, you know, these lost souls, how do they feel about what Salem has become today?
You know, that's a really good question. When I first started giving tours and writing about Salem, I felt like there was a lot of animosity and like a lot of sarcasm and like just sort of like, oh, not again, you're trying to communicate with me, you know, like kind of thing. I think there's been a lot of conjuring and necromancy. I don't know how necromancy, I guess, is the correct way to say it. I said it with the Southern accent, like necromancy, but necromancy. So there was a lot of people trying to communicate with spirit who really didn't know what they were trying to do. So I think there was a lot of frustration when I first started from the spirit community. But I do feel, I'm like, hey, the spirit community, like it's a talk show or something. But yeah, so that I feel like that there was major frustration. I think that there's still frustration in October because there's so many people that come into Salem and, you know, like they do investigations, like group investigations, and they're like, oh, not again. So if you really want a paranormal experience in Salem, don't go in October. Go in November. Go in December. Go during the slower season. Because the times that I've had my most intense paranormal encounters in Salem were all off season. It was never in October. So I think that, long story short, I think that the spirits they're happy with the fact that I'm telling their story, and I feel like I'm in good with them. I wasn't in good with them at first. They were like really kind of, I would say aggressive is not the right word, but they were kind of playing with me and kind of testing me out. And now I feel like they're like my old friends when I step back in Salem. There are a few, some spirits that I don't get along with because they're kind of grumpy old men, which is like Giles Corey, for example. If you see him, supposedly someone will either, like something will happen to Salem or something will happen to you or your loved one. And I've had people say that Giles Corey's energy has been around me when I'm talking about him. And he's one of those spirits I kind of stay away from, but he kind of does emerge. And, you know, other male figures that are in spirits or spirits now will come forward, I guess. And they like it when I tell their story and when I tell their story correctly.
Oh, wow. Nice. So it seems like you're starting the process of, the process of healing or some sort of, you're almost playing mediator between the living and the dead and trying to repair those, I guess relationships is a good word for it. Cause I mean, people are going to continue to visit Salem and there are people who are going to continue to visit Salem and try to communicate with them. So, I'm really fascinated with what your process has been and also the contact you've been making with Sarah Good. That's been really interesting. I've seen your post on Facebook about it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's weird. Like with this book specifically, I feel like the spirits connected with me in so many different shapes and forms throughout the process. And some of them came you could say it came in human form. And others came in spirit form. So I felt like they were with me in this writing process. And I know that sounds kind of freaky, but I really felt that. And what the spirit did, so I was basically at the location that has been pinpointed as the actual gallows where where they were hanged in 1692. Mm-hmm. And I was at the memorial, which was built this last year, and like it was the 325th anniversary of the first round of hangings. And so I was there, and I was, kind of like taking photos of the memorial, which is behind a Walgreens, by the way. And so it's not a very, it's not a very private location, but it's a really well put together memorial behind a Walgreens. And so I was taking pictures, and this woman walks by, walks up to me, and I'm like, where did she come from? And I was like taking pictures. She's like, hello there. And she kind of talked in like an old school voice, and she's like, what's going on here? And I'm like, oh, this is the new witch trials memorial to honor Gallows Hill. And this is where the innocent people from 1692 were hanged. It's known as Proctor's Ledge. And I was kind of like pointing to the different people and kind of giving her a mini tour. And she was like, she had no idea what was going on. And then when I was talking to her, she's like, I've never heard of such a thing. And I'm like, you've never heard of the Salem witch trials, and you live in Salem? And
and you're in Salem.
Not to, I know, it's like, hello. And she looked like she was potentially transient, maybe homeless. And I was trying to just make her feel like, make her feel comfortable. And her face was very ruddy, and she was just kind of like a weathered New England woman. And so then I was kind of giving her the lowdown, and then I was like, well, no, right up that hill, the hill up there is where they would actually do we believe is where the actual executions took place. And so, and I also, I'm like, hey, what's your name, by the way? And she was like, oh, my name is Sarah. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then not even thinking anything weird about it. And then I kept talking about the trees and the hill, and I turned around and she vanished. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, Sarah, okay. And then to make it even more strange, it was Sarah Good's birthday, the day that I was there.
Oh.
And that made it even more bizarre. And the more I replay it over and over again, I think, I really feel like that maybe she took a human form. And somehow the communication was done in a different way. Other times it's been, I can use my dowsing rod to communicate, or I can use a psychic medium to say like, oh, well, Rebecca Nurse is right behind you. In the case of Sarah Good, I thought she came to me, whether the person's still around or not, in sort of a human form to kind of communicate to me. And it's weird that like she does. I really don't think that anyone that either lives or visits Salem doesn't know about the witch trials from 1692. And this woman did not.
And that's interesting too, because, well, one, how does that happen? And do you think that maybe she's still in her mindset, she's still stuck in her timeline, so to speak? So, or do you think maybe she was kind of testing you out and seeing, how you would handle that whole conversation?
I really think that she didn't know what was going on. And I really think that she didn't know like why that was there, that memorial was there. And I really think that she did not know that the witch trials happened. So if in fact it is sort of a manifestation of Sarah Good, I don't think she knew what happened to her. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, and of course this is, I write nonfiction, but this is kind of like fantastical and in the description, but it's just, I just still find it odd that she didn't know about the witch trials and it was completely oblivious to what happened in 1692. So I'm not sure what to think about it. I just think that it's weird.
Yeah, no, it's very odd. And, but back in her time too, I mean, to create something like a memorial for, supposed witches, that was completely unheard of. Like, these poor people probably assumed that they were going to be forgotten or their name tainted for the rest of their lives before they died.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, like she was like, just like you're right, like it was, she was like, what is this? You know, like it was kind of like what, like why is there a memorial? If you, you know, when you go to Salem, there's memorials everywhere you go. So she obviously either wasn't from Salem or has never been to Salem, but she's kind of like blown away that there was some memorial. And I think she wanted to know what the witch trials were, like what witch trials was exactly and what happened. Mm-hmm. So I still don't know. I think that it works really well for my new book. And I think that I do think spirit comes in different forms. I mean, she could be someone that is, you know, just oblivious to the witch trials. Not to say she's Sarah good reincarnated, but she just kind of manifests. And also, just, you know, she disappeared. So she was talking to me and then she left. So like that part, I don't think a human can actually just disappear.
No. I mean, if she ran off, you would still hear her running off. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, this guy's talking crazy. He's talking about witch trials. But yes, it was just a weird situation. And, you know, I've had spirit communication come in that way before. I was doing an interview in Spidergate Cemetery, which is in Leicester, Mass. And it's supposedly one of the most haunted cemeteries in Massachusetts. And there was what they call it, the gatekeeper, which is a human guy. But so we were walking to this cemetery hidden in the back of this like kind of farming community. It's a Quaker cemetery in Leicester. And my friend Liz, she was the driver, and she was also my camera person. And she was behind me, and I kind of like ran up to the cemetery, and she was like kind of walking with the camera, and she dropped the car keys in the middle of the woods. And this random man kind of emerged from the woods with a lady and said, ma'am, you dropped your keys, and kind of in an old school voice. And then she's like, thank you so much. And then he quickly goes back into the woods and disappears. So we're like, what is going on? And I've heard multiple reports of this guy and this woman in the cemetery, and his voice, like hearing the conversation, he sounded like he was old school, like he was maybe like turn of the century, like the 1920s, 1930s. So it was an older version, older accent. So I've had it happen before, but it's just strange that when those things happen, it's just very strange.
Yeah, it's very perplexing. And then when you hear that there's other stories like that, it's, you know, you start to think, either someone is really dedicated to a prank or there's something to this. And most people are not that dedicated to a prank. Maybe for like a week, like, but not for years.
he's like, yeah, exactly. Like you're going to hide in the woods and then come out when people walk to the cemetery. Like, hello. this is like not going to happen. And it's weird because like my friend Christine, she had the same experience happen about 3 years prior. And she's like, you know, Sam, they just kind of disappeared. And I'm like, well, that's what happened with us too. So apparently I thought like maybe it was like maybe camping in the woods or something, like some explainable reason as to what really happened. But both times that I've heard the story, the guy and the woman just disappear. And what's weird about that situation, the woman doesn't talk either. It's just the man talking, and the woman just is by his side. And then they emerge from the woods and they go back into the woods, and they just kind of like, you don't see them again. And they kind of cross your path as you walk into the cemetery.
That's interesting. All right. I mean, and these occurrences are consistent. So that gives it some meat as well. So.
And also where I, you know, the Sarah Good sighting or potential Sarah Good sighting, there's been multiple reports of other kind of weird things happening. In my book, I talk about how one woman, she was visiting the gallows at Proctor's Ledge, and she felt like she was kind of going back in time. So it's like almost like this portal to another dimension kind of thing. And I didn't really explore that from a paranormal research perspective, but I've heard people say that multiple times. I have my one good friend who's a major skeptic, a local historian, her name's Catherine Rakowski, and she had an encounter there a few years ago before it was actually a memorial of what looked like a hooded figure wearing an old, like 17th century execution, like a hood, on the street. Hmm. She was driving by, and there was a car wash there before. She was driving by like that area, and her friend was in the car with her, and this guy kind of wearing a old school execution cape kind of came up to the window and was like knocking on the window, and Catherine was like, she's like to her friend, she's like, "Do you see that man? What is that man doing?" And her friend was like, "What man?" And then Catherine, yeah, exactly. And then Catherine was like, "Oh my God." So she saw something that her friend did not see. And according to Catherine, who I totally believe, because she's not the type to make up ghost stories or make up anything, it kind of haunted her. And so this is the exact location where we later found out was the execution site.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That just gave me chills.
Yeah.
Gosh, and to be the only one seeing an executioner, I mean, gosh, that's a little, that's unsettling. It's like, oh, God, bad omen? Like, what is this? Wow.
And she's also one of those people that she's also close to the spirits, and she grew up, I mean, her dad volunteered at the Rebecca Nurse Homestead in Danvers. So she grew up in the Rebecca Nurse Homestead. So she's very close to Mary Easty and to Rebecca Nurse and the three sisters from the witch trials. So she, you know, she has a relationship with the spirits as well. So it is interesting that she saw it and her friend did not.
Yeah. Ugh. Nice. Wow. Well, Sam, we are getting to that time. And so I have one more question for you. What
sure.
do you hope that people will get out of Wicked Salem?
I hope that people get that Salem is changing, and they're really trying to make a concerted effort as a group to not be spooky world and to really embrace the history and get the history correct. And, you know, I kind of talk a lot about that juxtaposition. And in my past, I've been very critical of the commercialization of the horrors that unfolded in 1692. And to kind of approach this book with the lens that things are changing in Salem, and there is a sort of this renewed interest to get the history correct, and but also, you know, make it a destination for people that want to learn about history. It's a wonderful historic location, and there was more to Salem than what happened in 1692. However, we can still learn from that now. So I hope that they learn that things are changing and that the history is a lot more complicated than what you see on TV.
Wonderful. Well, I'm excited for this book, and I am really so grateful to have you on the show tonight. This has been a blast. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know this is your busy season right now, and so I really appreciate that you came onto the show tonight.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and I'm looking forward to seeing your The Most Terrifying Places show on the Travel Channel.
Oh, it'll either be me or a hotter and thinner version of me. We'll find out on Sunday.
Awesome.
Sam, where can people find you? What's so, like, Facebook? What's your website? Where can people track you down?
I would recommend – so now I have my own website. Because before I had – so every book had its own website, and I had so many books. So go to sambaltrusis.com, and it's BALTRUSIS. .com, and that has pretty much everything, upcoming events, TV show appearances, you know, upcoming books. So go to sambaltrusis.com.
Excellent. All right. Once again, Sam, thank you so much, and have a wonderful night.
You too. Happy Halloween.
You too. Happy Halloween.
Bye.
All right, everybody, that was Sam Baltrusis, and wow, guys, this is an awesome show tonight. I'm really grateful to Sam for taking time out of his busy schedule to be on, and we will be back in 2 weeks, new guest, same channel, and we'll do a guest announcement fairly soon. So While I still have your attention, don't forget to check out Most Terrifying Places in America this Sunday at 10 p.m. We'll see who made the cut. We'll either get Alex or Earth to Alex, for those of you who are into the DC universe. You know, you should probably get that reference. And that's it, everybody. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, Ravens and Crows. You can connect with me on Facebook or visit my website, alexmatsuo.com. And folks, that is the show for tonight. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time. And be sure to heed the call.
Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. LiveParanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.